Donut Bag is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Your data is your business. Protect it with ExpressVPN for 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. Go to the link listed in my Twitter profile.
This might be more of a therapy session than talk about the Penguins. When I saw that the Penguins brought back Malkin and Letang, I said, what are we doing? Why even bother? Why even bother playing the season? Kind of like the Steelers. Why even bother playing the season? And talk me down from the ledge, because, I mean, does this team have hope?
Well, Joey, I think it does. First of all, let me start with Letang. I know he's 35. I know he can frustrate people with his occasional brain farts on the ice. But this is not your normal 35-year-old athlete. This guy, the condition he's in, the way he takes care of himself, it's different than even other athletes. And I was watching on the very first day of training camp, Steve Mears and I were watching the conditioning drills. And it's basically just a bunch of grown men skating laps until everyone starts puking. That's basically what it is. By the last drill, Chris Letang was literally 50 feet ahead of everyone else and just standing there looking at them while they were all like falling to the ice on their knees. He's just different. So I really think he can play at an extremely high level for at least a couple of more years. Malkin, he's still going to put up points, because when you have that much talent, you're going to put up points. I certainly worry about the regression more with him. And I think when you watch Crosby, Malkin, and Letang play, just in terms of the eye test, Crosby and Letang don't really look appreciably different than they ever have. Malkin's different. You can see he's lost a step. Now, maybe it's because of the ACL injury 16 months ago. Maybe it's because he's not in the condition those two are in, and who is? That's not really a knock on him. So I worry more about him moving forward, certainly. He doesn't look like quite the same player to me. I still think they're a good team, though. And I still think there's some reason for hope.
Yeah, I think Malkin is the big worry. But, okay, it seems like it's one thing to lose a step and still be good. But it seems like with Malkin, he's lost a step, but he still hasn't thought that he lost a step. And he still thinks he could do the same things he's done 10, 15 years ago. And that's the scary part is, you know, if you could just be a good player within the system, that's fine. But it seems like he tries to do too much because he doesn't realize he's old anymore.
You do see at times with him, he will try to skate through the neutral zone and just stick handle around everybody. And in 2012, he could do that whenever he felt like it. It's not 2012 anymore. So, no, I do think he needs to make some adaptations to his game. He's still a force on the power play. He will still put up huge point totals with the man advantage. He's still got the one-timer. He's a very gifted power play guy. His 5-on-5 performance last season, in my opinion, wasn't particularly good. They need him to be a lot better in that regard. He's going to start the season on a line with Brian Rust and Jason Zucker. That's not coincidental. Those two guys are really good skaters, and they're really good defensively. And those are two things that maybe Malkin doesn't have as much as he once did. And Mike Sullivan knows that. So he's flanking him with guys who can take care of a lot of the defensive responsibilities, and maybe their speed can help him a little bit. He'll put up his numbers, but is he a truly great player anymore? That you certainly can question if that's the case.
I think the line mates are a huge thing for him, because at least last year, he kind of had like the leftovers and the scraps. Crosby always had Gensel and Rust, and Malkin pretty much had crap. So yeah, let's help him out. Let's get him some good line mates. And I mean, Rust is great, and Rust has worked well with Malkin before. Sure. But Zucker, he's another reason I'm annoyed. Like every year, it's the same thing with him. It's like, well, we think he might be good, and then he's either hurt or he's not, or something like that. Like,
right?
Come on, man.
He's been a disappointment. And one of the reasons Zucker, I think, is viewed as being such of a disappointment is just how much they gave up for him. You gave up a first round pick and a really good prospect. Right? That, you expect more in return. I would say with Zucker, I don't mean to knock the guy, he's just not quite as talented as I thought he was, like in terms of the hands, the ability to finish. Like I don't know. I thought he was a better finisher than what we have seen. And he jokes about it too, how his hands aren't that great and he knows it. He can still skate. I just think he needs to be the third wheel on a line. So I think expectations are reduced from where they were a couple of years ago, but that doesn't mean he can't be an effective player. I mean, we know Malkin and Rust are good together. So if Zucker, you know, can do the dirty work and punch in 15 or 20 goals, that could still be a really good second line. I think that's probably what they are hoping for and expecting. And he does get hurt all the time. You're right. I mean, the guy last year was painful. He was so injury prone. Every time he would come back, he would get hurt a game or two later. I feel for him. He's a really good guy. And I know he's frustrated because he knew the expectations were considerable when he came here and he wanted to impress everybody and it hasn't worked out. But if he can just stay healthy, I still think he's an okay player. I just think the bottom line is they gave up way too much for him.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other thing, Kapanen, I don't get, well, they brought him back. So it's like, it's another thing of, well, maybe this is the year. Maybe this is the year. It's like the same thing. I mean, what are you seeing in Kapanen so far?
Just don't trust him for a second. I know he's talented. He's fast as hell. He can skate. And you know, he does some things in practice and even in games sometimes, like, wow, like this guy's so talented. He's not reliable. I still see him doing the same stuff in training camp that we saw last season. They skate down the right wing and pull up and stay on the perimeter. Like, what are you doing? I don't know what to expect from him. It's funny, when he was given his new contract back in the summer, I was on my way to lunch with a friend of mine in the North Hills, and I got a text from somebody who works for the Penguins that said Kapanen, you know, $3.2 million, 2 years. So I called this person and I said, oh, so they gave him a 2-year deal, like 1.6 a year, so 3.2 total. And this person said, no, 3.2 a year. I said, what? Like what did he do to earn that contract?
Exactly.
I don't get it. I like some of the things they did this summer. Like, I think Jeff Petrie's a good player. I'm sure we'll get into that. And I think they did some good things. And whether you wanted Malkin and Letang to come back or not, I think you can agree they took a lot less money than anybody expected to come back. So, okay. Why are you bringing Kapanen back? $3.2 million a year. I just don't trust him. I haven't been that impressed with what I've seen in camp. Give him a chance, but my expectations for him are pretty low.
And it seems like so is
to grow up, I guess.
Yeah, that's scary. But at least, I mean, in previous years, their thought was, here's our second line guy. He's going to work with Malkin. And now they're like, okay, we'll stick you in the third line. And I mean, and a third line on paper of Carter, Danton Heinen, and Kapanen seems like it could be okay. So
it's maybe. Okay, right? No, I mean, here's the thing. Carter and Kapanen, they have a really good relationship off the ice. Jeff Carter is kind of the old wise man of the Penguins, kind of like Matt Cullen once was. You know, Jeff Carter, however, boy, let me tell you something. There's some stories about him back in his younger days when he was a Flyer. That guy could party a little bit. That's always, you know, the thing about Kapanen. He's a young guy who enjoys the nightlife, et cetera. And I think they kind of understand each other in a way. Excuse me. So, you know, maybe those two can work on the same line because they have a good relationship off the ice. We'll see. Heinen scored 18 goals last year. If he can do that again, boy, would that be a godsend. And they got him cheap, too. That was a great contract they got. They got Danton Heinen for $1 million or whatever it was. Like, you know, this is a guy who probably is worth more than that. It could be an okay line. I do have some concerns about the bottom six in general, however. I think the top two lines should be really good. The bottom six, okay.
Yeah, I mean, the fourth line of Bluger, McGinn, and I guess Archibald, it's not bad. I mean, I hope Bluger is okay. It seems like he just fell off after he got hurt last year, so hopefully he's okay. The problem, yeah. McGinn is okay.
He's a Canadian firm boy, Brock McGinn, even has the name. I mean, I will say this with Teddy. Two things happened last year. Number one, he broke the jaw against Winnipeg. that's a tough injury to come back from. You can't eat for weeks. Like, you lose a lot of strength. He just physically didn't look the same when he came back. And he also lost Zach Aston-Reese as his left wing. And I've never been a huge Aston-Reese fan, but for whatever reason, that line worked. Those two had chemistry. They played well together. Bluger was not very good in the playoffs. I just didn't like his game down the stretch at all. He's a big guy for them. You know, if they can get, you know, 10, 15 goals out of Teddy, and if his penalty killing goes back to the elite level that you would expect, he's a nice player to have around. McGinn is another one. Brock McGinn, people forget, was really good in the first half last season. I think he had like 9 or 10 goals in his first 40 games. Like, that's a really great pace for a bottom six guy. He got hurt. Just didn't look the same when he came back. Really didn't produce much at all. So those are two really interesting guys and important guys for the Penguins. If they can go back to their form, you know, 12 months from now, or 12 months ago, rather, that's a really big deal for the bottom six.
Yeah. Where does Ryan Poehling fit in? Is he close to being there? Is he just like one of the first people that will come up if something gets hurt?
Yeah, he'll be, in all likelihood, he's going to be the 13th forward. So he'll be the healthy scratch to start the season. He's a natural center. They like him better at center. I thought he was just okay in training camp. I didn't think he was terrible. For those who don't know much about him, he is a former first-round pick of the Montreal Canadiens. He's still a young guy. I think he's like 23 or something. So really young. He's a big kid. He can skate. He's the kind of player, if a scout saw him, he'd be like, hey, let's go get him. He's big. He can skate. He's a good skater. He's a natural center. There's a lot of things to like there. For whatever reason, he just hasn't kind of put it all together. Maybe hockey IQ standpoint, maybe is not the highest. I don't know that for a fact, but that's kind of the word on him from some people I know who covered him in Montreal. Like, physically, he's impressive, but he just doesn't think the game at a high level necessarily. But you're going to see him play. And, you know, first round pick that young, to get him as kind of a throw into a deal is not really a throw in. I think it was more than that. Maybe he will be of use. And you got Sam Poulin, who will be the first center called up from Wilkes-Barre. They've moved him to center, and total bust at wing. But he actually looks okay at center. I think he's going to be an NHL player, not a great one by any stretch. But I think he projects to be a third or fourth line center, which isn't what you want when you draft a left wing in the first round. But if you can get something at least out of him, if he can be a decent NHL player, at least it's better than nothing.
His ceiling is slight bust instead of total bust. So,
right.
Yeah. What about, I don't even see Lagari. Is he even, I don't even see him like on a prospect list or anything like that. Is he still alive?
Yeah, he is still with the living last I checked. Now he'll be in Wilkes-Barre. I just don't think he's that good. Much like Poulin, these two guys just don't skate very well. If it were the 80s, they'd be good players. You don't have to skate that great in the 80s if you were big and could shoot the puck. And they're big and they can shoot the puck. Legere, like, he's got a really good shot. He does. And he thinks the game at a high level. He's a big, thick kid. Just can't skate. You can see it all the time. He's always a step behind. And I don't know how you fix that.
So he could have been on Mario Lemieux's wing and scored 40 goals like Warren Young or Robbie Brown or something.
I think you and I probably could have done that show.
Probably.
But no, I mean, yes, he's that kind of guy. Like, because you can tell he's smart. Like, he knows where to go. And I'm telling you, he has a heck of a shot. But you just see it with Poulin and Legere. They just look slower and slower every year. You feel bad. They're nice kids. They trust me, they want to break through in the worst way. They're big, and the Penguins could use some size, but not if you're going to slow everything down to that extent.
It's funny. You say, oh, we traded a lot. We traded a first-round draft pick for Zucker, and it didn't work out. But then if you keep that first-round draft pick, it doesn't work out either. So,
well, I am reminded. I was talking years ago with Jim Rutherford, of all people, and Jim's no stranger to trading, you know, prospects and draft picks. But he would always tell me, he said, I don't give a damn about trading draft picks because usually they're not going to work out anyway. He said, if I have a player I've already drafted and we know he's going to be good after we've seen him play for a year or two in Wilkes-Barre, he said, I don't like to trade those guys as much. He said, draft picks are kind of a crapshoot. And I know what he means. I mean, it's true. People think, oh, it's not like the NFL where first-round picks are almost always locks to, you know, be good players. It's, you know, It doesn't always work that way in the NHL.
These are 18-year-old kids. What do you expect? You're basically picking out kids and seeing how they're going to work out. Yeah, in the NFL, yep. they're you know, like 21 years old. They've developed a little bit.
Yep, that's true.
It's a total gamble. It's a total crap.
Cool it is. So,
yeah, yeah. On to the defense. I think no worries about Letang, but Dumo, I don't know. I mean, he hasn't looked right in a while.
No, he hasn't. He hurt his ankle. It was in St. Louis. It was Thanksgiving weekend in 2019. He hurt his ankle. Really nasty play behind the net. He missed, gosh, 2 or 3 months. I think that was the COVID season, so that's kind of a blur. But he's not looked the same since then. But there is something with his skating that just seems a little off to me. And Brian Dumoulin, you could make an argument he is the best defensive defenseman the Penguins have ever had. Seriously, like he and I'm talking their whole franchise. He's up there. And last year, all of a sudden, it was like, boy, that was Dumo's guy that scored that goal. Or, boy, that was Dumo's turnover that led to that goal. And you never used to say that about him, ever. He's always been so reliable. And I've even talked with people in the organization who are like, man, we're a little worried about Dumo. Like, he's never struggled like this before. So, was it a bad year? Is he getting old? Was there a lingering injury? It could be any of those things. The Penguins are hoping it was just a bad year. I talked with him the other day. He said he feels great, but they always say that this time of year. So we'll see how it goes. We know Letang wants Dumoulin to play with him. And it's a contract year for Dumo, by the way. He's a free agent at the end of this season. I don't know that he'll be back next year. He will have to have a good season to get a couple of more years out of the Penguins, I would think. No, he's an important guy. If he can have a little bit of a bounce back, that's a big deal because I think the rest of the blue line is pretty good, especially on the right side. You've got Letang, Petrie, Jan Ruda, who's a really solid player, and Chad Ruedel behind them. That's really good on the right side. I mean, really good. The left side, you know, you have some question marks when you have Dumoulin. What version of him do we see? Marcus Pettersson. You know, Marcus is okay, but he's never really put it all together. He can be frustrating. Then you've got Ty Smith, who's really talented, but he's also young and is going to make defensive mistakes. P.O. Joseph, I think they're going to trade him. They're trying to, but hasn't gone through yet. Mark Friedman actually plays better on the left than on the right. So they have a lot of depth and a lot of talent, but still a couple question marks.
What's the deal with P.O. Joseph? Is he just not good or is he just not fit in with this team?
He's not a Brian Burke and Ron Hextall kind of player. Now, that's laced with hypocrisy because Ty Smith isn't either. Like, they're both small guys. They're both puck-moving, you know, defensemen. There's a reason the Penguins went out and got Jeff Petrie and Jan Ruda this summer. They're big dudes. They can clear out the net a little bit. Now, Petrie's known more for his offensive ability, but he's a big guy. And Ruda's a big guy, too. They're not like Scott Stevens types. Those players don't really exist anymore. But the Penguins were very adamant that they wanted to get bigger and stronger in front of their net. Okay. And Marino was not very good in front of the net. Matheson, just average at best in front of the net. So, yes, they've upgraded in that department. P.O., though, he's a little guy. He's not short, but there's just not much to him. You know, he's easy to push around. They don't like that in a defenseman. And I do feel like he has plateaued. Do you remember a couple of years ago, it was during the COVID season when no fans were allowed in the building. P.O. Joseph got called up. He played 5 or 10 games. He looked really good. It's like, whoa, this guy's a player. He hasn't really looked like that since then. He doesn't look terrible. He just kind of looks okay. And I my sense is he will be traded sooner rather than later.
What do you get for him? I mean, in theory, it's like, hey, we got this young defenseman. But at the same time, it's like, you just giving him away for nothing?
That's the problem. And they have no leverage right now because of their salary cap situation. It's very simple. Ty Smith is the guy they like. They want him to be on the third pairing. They can send Ty Smith to Wilkes-Barre for the start of the season and be under the salary cap. P.O. Joseph would have to clear waivers. And they know somebody will claim him if you can get a decent-looking young defenseman for nothing. So the Penguins have no leverage, and half the league is against the salary cap right now and can't really take on additional salaries. The best thing for the Penguins would be to trade P.O. Joseph, maybe to a team that has a, you know, a prospect who hasn't worked out, maybe a prospect for a prospect, something along those lines. Maybe Ron Hextall can get it done, but it's a tough spot for the Penguins right now.
Yeah, when you're up against the cap and you have Pettersson making like $4 million, that's just tough. Is there any hope for him? I mean,
well, in terms of trading him?
No, just or I mean, I think it's impossible to trade him unless you like sweeten the deal and get thrown a draft pick or something.
I don't even know that they want to trade him, which might sound crazy, but what we've just said about Ty Smith and P.O. Joseph, if you trade Pettersson, then those are probably your two defensemen on the left side behind Dumoulin. Do you really want two guys who are almost essentially rookies who have defensive issues in your blue on your blue line? That I don't think they do. I think they want your quote-unquote stay-at-home defenseman to play with Petrie. And really, Pettersson's the only option because Dumoulin's going to play with Letang. No one else is comfortable playing with Letang. Only Dumoulin is. So, you know, as for Pettersson, I didn't think he was terrible. He was actually okay in the first half last season. I thought he was pretty good. You really saw him tail off in the second half. He was a healthy scratch some in March and April down the stretch. Really frustrating. He was responsible for a lot of goals against, his, you know, getting his ass kicked in front of the net, which is unfortunately an issue for him. He did play pretty well in the playoffs. I thought he and Marino were actually good in the playoffs against the Rangers. So that was encouraging. And I will say this for Marcus. Like, he doesn't have a huge ceiling because he's not like an offensive threat at all. But he's only 26. And for a, especially I find for like tall, lanky defensemen, it just takes them a while. Like, it takes them a while to really assert themselves in the NHL. So I think there's some room for him to potentially get better. The Penguins hope so because, like I said, they are so good on the right side. But on the left side, you know, they're not bad, but there are still some question marks there.
How do you think the Penguins will stack up in the Metro? Have the other teams improved that much?
No, not really. I would say some teams underneath them have improved. The good teams are still good, but not necessarily great. The Metro is interesting. You got, like, I think New Jersey's kind of interesting. They've made some additions. I think Jack Hughes is a real star. Like, they could push for a playoff spot. It wouldn't shock me. Columbus has Johnny Gaudreau now. He's going to make an impact. He's a great player. Columbus is that team. They never really have that star power, right? Well, you got Gaudreau and Patrick Laine now. Like, there's maybe something there. They're interesting. I think the Islanders stink, especially without Barry Trotz. I think the Flyers really stink. At least they'll be fun to watch with Torts as their coach. Like, that's like a match made in heaven.
Seriously, like, perfect marriage.
Can you wait for Torts to lead the Flyers into Pittsburgh? Like, come on, how perfect is that?
Oh my God.
Yes, it's unbelievable. They're not any good, but it'll be good for theater. And when I look at the division, like, Washington might still be a playoff team, but like the Penguins, they're old. And I just like the Penguins roster better. Nicholas Backstrom probably out for the year, which is obviously a huge blow for them. They do have Darcy Kemper and Nett, so they have like a real living, breathing goaltender now, which will help them. But I think the Penguins are better than them. So who does that leave? That leaves Carolina and the Rangers. Carolina's a really good team. They'd be my pick to win the division. They're just so deep, and they're just made for the regular season. They can skate. They play hard every night. They added Max Pacioretty to their lineup along with Brent Burns. I mean, they're good. They're the team to beat in the division, I think. The Rangers, we know who their goalie is, and we know how much talent they have with their four or five best players. I don't really love the rest of their team after that group. They're clearly a playoff team, I think. Don't you think Sidney Crosby would like to get another shot at the Rangers in the postseason? I know which way I would bet if that happens, because I know how he feels about how last season ended. Oh, and oh boy, can I go for some Penguins Rangers in round one?
That was one of those things where you said, Rangers, who cares? Okay, you know, we don't really hate them. And then at the end, you wanted to murder almost every single player on that team. And that's what I love about the playoffs. You know every player and you hate them.
Yeah. And Jacob Trouba, now the Rangers captain, I might add.
Oh, yeah. Great.
Yeah, no, the playoffs, boy, they can do some things to the way we view human beings and perhaps to the way we dehumanize human beings. That's what's great about the NHL playoffs. You know, it just it gets the emotions going. But no, I think the Penguins, I actually picked them to finish second in the division behind Carolina this year. And I actually have them playing the Rangers in the first round. So maybe that's the sports writer in me that just wants the drama. But I could certainly see it happening. But no, the Penguins, it's a good division. It really is. It's deep. It's good. But I think they still stack up pretty darn well against most teams.
When you mentioned best Penguins defenseman of all in their history, I think Brooke Sorpik has to be number one, right?
Could be. It's a good choice. I mean, there's a lot of options now. We have Brooks and Ulf, and you know, some old timers will throw some guys at the 70s at you. I mean, it's you know, there's no shortage. Dumoulin's not physical like Orpik or Ulf, guys like that. Maybe better with the puck, I would say. And then the game has changed over the years, right? Like, I don't know if Dumo could have played in the 80s. He would have just gotten his ass kicked every game. Like, he's not some tough guy. Like, how do you think that would have gone in front of the net if he would have been standing in front of the net against Cam Neely? Like, probably not very well. The game has changed a lot. But no, Brooks Orpik, we forget how good he was. Brooks could really skate too. I'm just such of a good skater. Physical presence. I still remember his shift against the Red Wings was in game three, I think, when he had like the four hits in one shift.
He was knocking out like not only the people on the ice, he was knocking out the bench. He was knocking out the poor guys selling beer. He knocked them out, knocked out a few people in the first row. That was insane.
Oh, yeah. No, he was. And he was an important figure on those teams, too. He was a no-nonsense kind of guy, a real leader, very committed to winning, and certainly had quite a career.
Was Ulf Samuelsson a good defensive defenseman, or was he just a hard hitter that was more flashy and showy and just like, quote-unquote, Jack Lambert on skates more than a good defenseman?
That's a great question. Kasparaitis was like that too.
Oh, yeah.
I hate speaking ill of the early 90s Penguins because those are my guys. I grew up watching them. That'll always be my team. I don't like using the word overrated, but Ulf, like, yeah. He was very good at certain – like, I think they needed him. Like, I do, for the way the game was played back then. What he did to Cam Neely in the playoffs alone, and I don't just mean the famous hit. I mean, like, they went to war that series, and he got the best of them. You needed someone like that at that time, but he screwed up a lot. If I'm not mistaken, if you go back to the David Volek goal, I do believe it was Ulf who screwed up and got trapped and turned it into a 3-on-1 on that goal. Yeah, things did happen like that on occasion.
I think a threat – of Ulf being so physical was more important than actually him, like actually how he played. Larry Murphy was good offensively and I'm guessing defensively too.
He was fine. Ulf was fun to watch though.
Yeah.
Ulf was a menace. There's no doubt about that.
I just remember that series against the Bruins and Mike Milbury called Badger Bob Johnson a professor of goonism. That's like calling Mr. Rogers a thug or something like that.
That's like Hitler calling you a nationalist or something. That's like Mike Milbury just called me a professor of goonism. And Bob Johnson, like the nicest. I never met Bob Johnson. He's been dead 31 years, but by all accounts, the warmest, most wonderful human being. Certainly not a fan of goon hockey at all. And you've got Mike Milbury calling him that. It's actually one of the great moments in Penguins history. If you go back, that was game three of the 91 series between the Penguins and Bruins. Penguins were down 2-0, lost the first two games in Boston. Ulf takes out Cam Neely in game three. Milbury goes nuts. He's like banging his stick off the boards and everything. Mario scores on a breakaway a couple of minutes later. And if you go back and watch the replay, Mario beats Andy Moog top shelf. After the goal, Mario never smiles. He literally was just glaring as like his teammates were congratulating him. You could see he was like, all right, I've all had business. Enough of this team. Like this is it.
Was that the first run or the second run? Because the first one. The second one, he got hit by Adam Graves.
Right. And that okay, was when he came back. And the Boston series, the second year, was the famous Ray Bourque goal, which I'm sure Ray would like to forget. You know, it's funny. I grew up thinking Ray Bourque was like the most overrated player ever because back then there weren't many games on TV. You only saw when the Penguins played a team. And Mario would just, you know, toy with him every game. Then you look at Ray Bourque as like, oh, he put up 1,500 points and like he was great defensively. Oh, sorry, Ray.
Yeah, Mario made him look like a schmuck. Oh. It was amazing.
Yes.
All right, sir. Well, I could talk 90s Penguins with you for hours. But anyway, thanks for coming on. Always a pleasure.
You got it, Joey. Take care, buddy.
Yeah, see you.